This is the Rogers Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors. I'm your host, Louis Rogers, founder and CEO. Let's talk about Section 1031 exchanges. As we discussed in earlier episodes, Section 1031 of the Internal Revenue Code defers the taxable gain on the exchange of real property. To qualify, both the relinquished property and the replacement property must be of like kind. That makes the meaning of like kind very important for exchangers. If you look at the regulations that have been around a long time, like kind refers to the nature or character of the property and not its grade or quality. I've read that since the spring of 84. I have no idea what it means. But I can tell you that all real estate is like kind to all other real estate, provided it is real estate, typically under state law. So okay. There are things that you wouldn't consider, like working interests in Texas. That's real estate. That qualifies. And it's magical. The regulations are so friendly, so favorable to the taxpayer. It didn't have to be this way, but it is this way. IRS Treasury have adopted the congressional policy of allowing exchanges and encouraging them with rules. And so here's one that most people find this to be amazing. Real property can be improved or unimproved, and that qualifies. So you can exchange your farm, land for a shopping center, office building, any sort of improved real estate, or improved real estate for unimproved land.
Oh, okay.
Like kind is not really all that like kind. It just means it's real estate. There is an important point when you're doing your exchange is that your intent must be to hold the replacement property for investment or use in your business. Remember, we're talking about investment or business property. For investment or business property, your intent must be to hold. There's no statutory holding period. You won't find it in the code or the regulations how long you have to hold. It's just your intent must be to hold.
So like many other things in law, it's facts and circumstances. And one of the cool things is, you know, you will learn from Louis and I in these sessions and when you meet with us of, okay, here are some things to do so you have facts and circumstances, indicia, if I can use my one word from being a lawyer, that if and when ever there was an audit for you for some other reason and they got to the 1031, you could show the following kind of indicia that said, look, why would I have done this except for having the intention to hold for investment purposes?
Absolutely. And the key is the intent when you close. Let's say you exchange a rental property for another rental property. And the next day, someone shows up and offers you two times what you paid for it.
Wow, that's cool.
You didn't plan it. You didn't put it on the market. You didn't promote it. Somebody just showed up. You can
so
do
you didn't have
exchange.
A sign on it saying for rent. You hadn't engaged somebody. It was just they wanted the property and they're saying, look, whatever it takes, I'll buy it from you.
My intent was to hold for investment. I was going to rent the property. Somebody showed up. And so the rules are very friendly and flexible.
Cool.
Let's talk about tax consequences. This part always gives me the willies because I didn't do so well in math. But it's pretty simple math. We're talking about the tax. Remember, we're deferring the tax. Well, what the heck is the tax? Well, the tax is not the tax. It's the taxes, plural. We have the federal capital gains tax, and we have the federal recapture tax, and we have the 3.8% Affordable Care Act surcharge tax, and then we have the state tax.
Yes.
So that it's a lot of taxes, and some states are more than others. Some states are twice other states, and some states have no state income tax. So it varies across the board, but let's use a simple example where the tax is 35%. Let's just say 35%. So I'm going to sell my relinquished property. I bought a rental house for $100,000, and over 20 or 30 years, it's appreciated to $1 million. Not a surprising example.
Not in today's world.
And properties are bringing full price and above. So I have $1 million value. I have $100,000 basis in it. If I sell it, I will have 65% the net. If I exchange it, I'll have 100% to reinvest. So let's say I reinvest in something very safe and conservative that generates a 5% cash flow. You can do better, but let's say 5%. Your $1 million could generate how much, Rick? 5% on $1 million, is that $50,000?
I think so. I'll get my shoes off here and do the math, but I think it's $50,000 a year.
Nice. $50,000 a year of cash flow from my replacement property. If I reinvest the net, the $650, that's $32,500 a year. That's $17,500 a year to taxes. Over 10 years, $17,500 over 10 years, $175,000. If I hold that replacement property in an exchange for 10 years, I have added $175,000 to my family's wealth.
So put it in context, $175,000 over 10 years pays for college education at a good school, say $50,000 a year, $45,000 a year. It would pay for grandma being in a nursing home for a couple years. It's your money, and the government wants you to hold on to that money as long as you continue investing in real estate. So you're doing a good thing by doing a 1031.
Absolutely. Let's talk about some basic 1031 exchange rules. Two rules are critically important, and this is to obtain what we call complete deferral, 100% exchange.
Okay.
Because you can cash out some. Again, Willie in Stafford. Remember Willie in Stafford?
Yep.
He said he wanted $10,000. He wouldn't tell me why. I want $10,000. I want $10,000. Why do you want $10,000? Well, I never had any money, and I want a box of money. I'm going to roll around in a box of $10,000. He called his CPA and found out the tax on $10,000. No, I don't want $10,000. But you can cash out. If you cash out, it's taxable. If you want to cash out, it's your money. It's your life. Do it at the beginning of the exchange, right on the settlement statement. Cash it out on the settlement statement so it doesn't go into the QI and get hung up. Two basic rules. To obtain complete deferral, you must reinvest all of the net proceeds from the relinquished property. So look at your settlement statement. At the bottom, it says net proceeds to seller. That money will go to the qualified intermediary. That money must be reinvested. All of the equity, the net proceeds. Does that make sense?
If I put any money in my pocket, I'm going to pay taxes on that.
That's right.
Okay.
And if you want cash, it's your money. But take it at the beginning, or else it could get hung up in the qualified intermediary account for up to 180 days. So reinvest all the net proceeds. And then if there's debt on your relinquished property, when you borrow money, it's not taxable because you have to pay it back. We're not charitable organizations. As they say at the law school that Rick went to, we're not eleemosynary institutions. That was a good law school word. When you pay money back, it's after tax. It's after you paid your taxes. So if you have a debt, you can't get out of it in an exchange. You have to have equal or greater debt on your replacement property. So,
which again, if you think of the broader purpose,
yes,
of 1031, you know, your example, $100,000 house for rental is worth $1 million. The government wants you to stay involved in real estate because it means you stay involved in the community. You strengthen the community. You've already shown that you have the gravitas to do something right in real estate, and your gravitas can be focused on a community or in a DST or what have you. They want you to do this, but they're saying, look, we want all of you. Yeah, so if part of it was done through debt, we want you to stay playing at that level.
So very simple. Look at your settlement statement. Net proceeds are reinvested in the replacement property. Mechanically, they'll go to your qualified intermediary. And if you had debt on your relinquished property, you must have equal or greater debt on your replacement property. So you sell for 100, you have 50 in cash and a 50 debt. Your replacement property will reinvest the 50 of equity and will have a debt of 50 or greater. You can always have more debt. And there's one little footnote. If you want to reduce your debt, if you want to deleverage, you can use cash from another source. Okay. Because cash is after tax. We're all taxable people. So if we have cash, it's after tax. And then the last thing is receive nothing but like-kind property, no boot. In the country, the farmers are always throwing in a tractor to boot. Mm-hmm. If I receive a tractor or anything that's not like-kind, I'm taxable on the value of that thing. Well, not such a big deal. Tractors aren't usually worth that much.
You know, some of the folks that are listening may be involved in buying. Is the boot, does the boot have to be really, can it be de minimis? Is there a situation where, you know, there's a red wagon involved and it's worth a dollar? And
I think
just
that's goes insignificant.
Okay.
Pay a dollar for the red wagon. So we're talking about delayed or deferred exchanges. If you've been around a while, you remember Starker Exchange, Starker Trust, Starker. People used to call them Starker everything back in the 80s and 90s. That was a 1979 case. And it validated the delayed or deferred exchanges. Holding was it was a good exchange. And that's a magical case. Without Starker, we wouldn't be here today. We'd be billing hours or something else unpleasant. Let's talk about the various safe harbors. And this goes into another we call shaggy dog story. Back in the day when a young tax lawyer was in Washington for a private letter ruling for a client, the nice 1031 exchange expert for the government took the young lawyer aside during a break and said, this is from memory, but it's, let's see, 84 today. How many years is that? I can't do the math. Fingers and toes.
36, 37 years.
She said, and she's retired now. That's how long ago it was. She said, my mom owns a small rental property, and it's making her crazy with the tenants, the toilets, and the trash. I know we have Section 1031. For goodness sake, she's the government's expert on 1031 in 84, 85. But there are no rules on who holds the money or how to document the transaction. My mom can't afford a tax lawyer to structure an exchange on a small rental property. This seems unfair. And then the next Thanksgiving, while everyone is having turkey and trimmings, guess what I was reading?
I got to assume, based on your story, that the IRS or Treasury surprisingly actually listened. Said, maybe there's a way to codify this, to come up with a plan that actually works. And if you follow this plan, we're going to give you, the presumption is going to be that you've done it right. What's the key part of that plan?
The key is using the safe harbor. There are four of them, but the one that we use all the time is the safe harbor for qualified intermediaries.
Okay.
If you follow this protocol and use a QI, pay your $1,000 or so, then your exchange is presumed to be good. The taxpayer is not in actual receipt of the funds. Let's take a minute, talk about actual constructive receipt. When I go into closing and I'm the seller taxpayer, if I take possession of the funds, I'm taxable.
It's over.
I have 5-6 notebooks of cases and rulings where the taxpayer wins. Every time the taxpayer takes possession of the proceeds, actually or constructively through their agent, their lawyer, their CPA, their planner, their agent, actual or constructive receipt is taxable every time. What the IRS did is they said, if you use the qualified intermediary, what the cool kids call the QI, some people call them the accommodator. If you use them and follow this safe harbor, your exchange will be good. Will not be disqualified for technical reasons for actual or constructive receipt. So it was amazing that the IRS gave us this rule voluntarily so that everyone could do an exchange, even the nice 1031 exchange lady's mom who had a little rental house that wasn't big enough to support a tax lawyer to teach her how to do an exchange way back in the day, 35 years ago.
So there's one teaching point we want you all to come away with today, and you can underline it three times, is if you're going to do proper tax planning, you must do it prior to the closing.
That's correct.
If you can do that one thing, we can do miracles for you on the other side, but you got to get that in place before the closing.
That is absolutely true. You needn't worry about audits if you follow the safe harbor and all the other rules. There are a lot of rules. You won't be defeated on technical grounds. So nowadays, when I want to structure an exchange, I start by selling my relinquished property. I own an investment or business property. I want to sell it. I really want to exchange it. So I put it on the market. I find a buyer in my contract, purchase and sale. I put a provision in that says the buyer agrees to cooperate with me at no cost. That shows I'm intending to exchange. Before closing, I call the QI or the accommodator of my choosing and have them prepare an exchange agreement. The exchange agreement supersedes the contract to some extent to get the benefit of the safe harbor. We go to closing. The proceeds must go to the qualified intermediary, not to the taxpayer or the taxpayer's agent. This is all routine. We've done tens of thousands of these transactions. It's roughly 25-30% of all commercial transactions are structured as exchanges. It's as routine can be. Sold property, sold exchange begins. Qualified intermediary is holding the cash. Now the taxpayer seller becomes a buyer. Buyer I have to find a replacement property. So I go search the market. I find a replacement property. I negotiate a contract of my choosing, my terms, my price, whatever I want to be done will be done. I'll put a provision in saying that the seller agrees to cooperate with me in my exchange. And when the time comes to close, I will direct the QI to disperse the proceeds to the closing. The seller conveys the replacement property to the buyer. The QI funds, transaction's done. We have a buyer and a seller of a relinquished property, and we have a buyer and a seller of a replacement property. Nobody shakes anyone down for cooperation. In the old days, the seller or the buyer would want something for cooperating. Nowadays, the QI handles it for $1,000. Works like magic, but you must have the exchange agreement before you close. So those are the opportunities. There were a number of rules.
Rules? This rules. Is government? The regulations, rules? How horrible. Are there pages and pages and pages of rules? Or are there
not,
like a hand?
Not so bad. These are good rules.
Okay.
If you want to play the market, okay, you have an opportunity. So here's the way it works. In a delayed or deferred exchange, up to 45 days from closing, you can do whatever you wish in terms of number of properties. You want to acquire. I once had a colonel in Tidewater buy a subdivision, the whole subdivision. He bought 250, 300 houses of a subdivision as replacement property, and he did it within 45 days. No problem. But if you want to play the market, Congress said you have 45 days and then you have to identify in writing. So if you want to go beyond midnight of the 45th day, you have to identify in writing your replacement property. Now, first days, this is the Y2K thing.
Okay.
The day you close is not day one. I flunked algebra a couple of times, so I might have made this mistake before. The day you close is day zero.
Okay.
So you count 45 calendar days.
Okay.
Not business days. If it's Christmas, New Year's, or your mother's birthday, it's still calendar days. 45 days. Could be a holiday. Doesn't make any difference. It's 45 days. If you haven't closed on all your replacement property, then you have an option.
Okay.
You can pay the tax and call it a day, or you can say, I want to identify replacement property, and then you can create a list of replacement property, and you must close on all of the replacement property within 180 days or the due date of your tax return. Your eyes are rolling. 180 days.
What if I identify some properties? I'm not sure which one of those I want to buy. I mean, I have to buy all of them that I identify?
You're going to have to use all your proceeds, or you'll be taxable on the funds that are left. So it's an option.
Okay. So I mean, let's say I identify, you know, three different properties. Must I buy all three of them?
No. It's your call.
Okay. It's just I have to go back to what we talked about earlier. I have to end up using all of my equity that I got, and I have to cover the same time. And I could spread it around a lot of different ways.
Any way you want.
Oh,
any way you want. For most people, closing within 45 days is the way to go. The ID is a technicality. It's possible to make mistakes. And so for most people on the DST side, DST investors are making an investment. They're not looking for a ranch or a farm or a property for their business. And so they look at the options, and in days or weeks, they're closing on their replacement property. They don't need to ID. If you're looking for something unique or special that you're going to use in your business, you need a new farm or a ranch, and maybe you need more time if you're what commonly called a house flipper, where you buy rental houses and every couple of years you flip them, you might need more time. But for most people nowadays, we close quickly. If you can't find all the properties you like, then you identify in writing by the 45th day. The identification is sent to the qualified intermediary in writing.
Okay.
By the 45th day. And what's on the list is a property you can acquire, properties you can acquire. If it isn't on the list, you can't acquire it in your exchange.
Okay. Okay. Well, then do I have several years now to make my investment once I get through the 45
days?
Oh, so roughly 6 months. Okay.
180 days or the due date of your tax return. whichever comes first, we can all extend our tax returns. That's a long way of saying you have 180 days.
So it's 180 days after the 45?
After the initial closing. Everything starts on day zero, 45 days. Go back to day zero, mark 180 days.
Okay. It's plenty of time to make a decision and make an action.
We're in a very hot real estate market.
Oh, yeah.
Most sellers are not going to allow you to sit around and contemplate the meaning of life.
Yeah.
They're going to want you to close, but you can. You have 180 days. There are no extensions. Come midnight of the 45th day or midnight of the 180th day, no extensions except for a presidentially declared emergency like a Katrina. Thank you for joining today's episode of Rogers Real Estate Show, sponsored by Capital Square Realty Advisors. Living in the sweet bro-